Margo, what is your role in the research on chronic wasting disease?
Our role in research is to supplement the work that's being done at the U of A and also to try to facilitate the field end of things. So Dr. Merrill and her students, for example, working on the deer movement studies and trying to define home range and collect animals to put collars on, we would work in conjunction with her to identify where the clusters of deer are, concentrations of deer where they would put their collars on. And then our role primarily in the research is to take the results from the research programs and apply those into our CWD control and management programs to try to improve our end of actually trying to minimize the amount of disease that's in deer in Alberta.
When did you first discover that we actually had CWD here?
We found it first in September of 2005. And that was an animal, it was an emaciated animal that came into a farmstead, a farmyard. And the farmer, you know, definitely detected something was wrong, called Fish and Wildlife. And so we responded, as we would do with any emaciated animal or an animal found in distress in the wild. And it actually quite surprised us that it came back as chronic wasting disease positive, because we had been looking for the disease in the wild since 1998. And tested, I forget how many thousands of animals by then, but certainly when this one came back positive, it was a bit of a surprise.
What happened then?
Then that was in September, and right away we went into the field to try to find out whether or not there were other infected animals in the immediate vicinity. So we very quickly put together a program that involved government staff, in conjunction with and cooperation with the landowners, to go right in the immediate vicinity of that case and collect more deer and see if we could find out whether there was any more CWD in the herd at that point. And we did indeed find one other case out of that. So we went back and did a little more, collected a few more. And at that point, that was through September and October. And then our primary hunting seasons in Alberta start in November. So at the same time that we were doing our collection programs, we also expanded the hunting opportunities so that when the hunting seasons came in that year, we made more opportunities widely available in that area so that hunters then could take the deer and start to reduce the numbers and also help us with a surveillance program to find out where the disease was, if there was any more disease in that area.
What's the situation today, 4 years later?
4 years later, we're still running basically the same program. We still rely extensively on hunters to turn in heads. We have, of course, made changes over the time period, so that we are now looking at what we've identified a CWD risk area, and this is for CWD in wild deer, as we've only found it in wild deer, although we've found it in both mule deer and whitetails. So when I say deer generically, it's both species that we're concerned about and that we're dealing with. We're now working as a risk area basically from Cold Lake to Medicine Hat, all along the Alberta-Saskatchewan border. Within that area, we have made it mandatory for hunters to submit the heads of hunter-harvested deer in that area, and that's our base, that's our base surveillance tool. So on average now, we're receiving in the order of 5,000 heads from hunter-killed deer each year, and we test those, and any positives that we find in those, that helps us map where the distribution of the disease.
And why the heads?
Why the heads? Good question. Because it's the only way we can test for chronic wasting disease. There unfortunately is no live animal test, so we have to have a dead animal to begin with. And the tissue that shows the prion changes that occur with an animal that has CWD, in deer, the first changes are detected in the lymph nodes at the back of the throat. And then as the disease progresses, you get the prion changes in the brain. So if we can get the heads from harvested animals, we get both tissues. We get the lymph nodes and we get the brain tissue, which if we have a positive animal, also helps us estimate the time that that individual might have been infected, in that if the prions are only in the lymph nodes and not in the brain, for example, then that indicates a relatively recent or early infection, as opposed to an animal that's got prions in the nodes and in the brain, it's had it for that much longer, so the disease has developed further. So that's why we use the heads.
So how long does a deer normally live?
Like
a normal deer.
Well, of course, that differs a lot, and it all depends on the framing of the question. Most deer, by far the majority of deer, die in their first year, as is the case with every wild mammal, in that the youngsters that are born, there's more produced than what can survive. So probably 50% of the fawns that are born each June die in their first year. So that's where the major mortality is. But I think what you're asking is more once, if you can get through that first period of being an uneducated youngster, then again, it's hard to say. Probably does will live longer than the bucks, because hunters do tend to focus on the adult males, as at least those hunters that are trophy hunters. But on average, probably 5, 6, 7 years would be a good age for a deer to reach, if it didn't have any additional mortality factors. And that brings me to the difference. Why are we concerned about CWD? Because CWD, as near as we can tell, this is a new disease on the landscape. It's an exotic disease. It is not something that has been in deer populations in Western Canada for generations. So it's a new exotic disease, and it seems to be an additive mortality factor, in that deer that get CWD, it's a fatal infection in every case, and they're probably going to die at most within 2 years of being infected. So if they're infected as yearlings, which a lot of them probably are, then they're going to be dying when they're 2 and 3 years old. And that's where you can start to build over time. You can see population effects, in that, take a doe, for example. Rather than living out to that 5, 6, 7 years that I mentioned earlier, if she only lives for 3 years, then all of the fawns that she would have produced in her later years are no longer available to help sustain the population. So that some of the populations that have had long-standing chronic wasting disease infections in Colorado and Wyoming and in other areas outside of Alberta, they are starting to see local populations that have a younger age structure. So they're not seeing the older does, and they're certainly not seeing the older bucks, because for reasons we do not yet understand, older males seem to be infected at 2 to 3 times the rate of older females. So as CWD builds up in a population, you lose the fawn production out of the does, but you also lose the older bucks, because they just don't live that long if they get CWD that kills them earlier than that.
Do you have any indication at this point what percentage of the deer population is infected with CWD?
And again, it depends on what you choose as the area. If you talk about the province of Alberta, then it's absolutely negligible. We have somewhere in the order of between 400,000 and 500,000 deer in the whole province. And as far as we know, we've detected CWD only directly up against the Alberta-Saskatchewan border. So you say the province, well, there's very little in the whole province. And even on the Alberta-Saskatchewan border, with our more random collections, we're still finding it's in the order of about 0.6% of the deer that are in the area where we've already found the disease that have chronic wasting disease. And that actually gives us, that's a very positive thing from a wildlife management perspective, because we believe that the disease is relatively recent in Alberta. It has not been there for 20 years, for example, or we would see more of it, and we would see a higher prevalence of it, and we would see infections in younger animals. And right now we're finding it primarily in the older aged animals. So given that it's relatively recent and not well established, then we do believe that we could have the opportunity to at least limit the further spread of this disease and not just sit back and watch it build up.
What are some of the things that the research that's being done, what has it told you about the spread of this disease?
Some really interesting things on two lines in particular. Probably three lines, but two in particular. Certainly the genetic work that Dr. Coltman and his associates have been doing have indicated that deer in our parkland habitats, which is one of the areas where we see chronic wasting disease in that Wainwright-Chauvin area, they're very closely related, but only at a very, very narrow scale. So that within, I think it's two or three kilometers, that the genetic relatedness tends to break down. So that tells us that the breeding and the movement are all occurring in a very, very small geographic area. So that if the disease is in that location, then it's likely to stay relatively narrow. It's not going to spread widely because the deer aren't moving all that widely. So that's certainly something that we've learned from the genetic end of things. And also, it dovetails with the work, some of the work for Dr. Merrill and her students, showing that similarly, home range sizes in our particular habitats, in that parkland habitat, home ranges are very small, and that rarely do does and their fawns stray more than 2 or 3 kilometers from the place where they were born, for example. At least spending certainly the large majority of their time in a very narrow geographic area. So we can take this information and feed it back into our response programs so that if we're going to go out and look for disease in the vicinity of a case that's already been identified, we now know that we're likely, the deer that have interacted with that infected animal are likely to be within a very narrow geographic distance, so that we can really narrow down and focus in perhaps a 3 or a 5 kilometer zone, as opposed to working at a 10 kilometer zone, which is where we had worked in some of our earlier programs based on what we thought, what was just traditional knowledge about home range sizes and deer movements. So we've been able to fine tune that and say, no, it's highly unlikely that deer are interacting a great deal at a 10 kilometer distance. We can certainly focus our attention into maybe a 3 kilometer distance.
What about the work of Judd Aiken, who's been looking at the way the prions get into the soil and last a very long time, especially if they get tied up with the clay particles in the soil?
Mm-hmm. Actually some really interesting work, and Judd and I have had a number of discussions about this, and I think that the elements, the aspect that he's working on is going to be extremely important in what we would call enzootic areas, in situations where the prevalence of the disease, the number of infected individuals, has built up to the point that significant amounts of prions may have been released to the environment, and therefore you've got environmental contamination. Now, at this point, the only place where we have evidence from the wild of what is likely an environmental contamination situation, there's two lines of evidence. One comes from the extremely heavily contaminated research facilities in Colorado and Wyoming, where a lot of the CWD research has taken place, and where we now know, looking back on history, that chronic wasting disease has been in those pens in Fort Collins, Colorado, probably for 40 years, back from the 1960s. And animals wasted away, died in those pens, no doubt contaminated heavily year after year, animal after animal, with prions. And that we now know that the soil in those pens is contaminated to the extent that if you put an uninfected animal in there, they develop chronic wasting disease. So the question is, though, and this is where you always have to try to apply theoretical or lab-based research out into the field. And we say, okay, well, but are there any situations in the wild where we see that kind of potential contamination year after year, animals that die of chronic wasting disease, which are shedding the most infectious material for the longest period, time after time in a very small area? And for the most part, we don't see that. Certainly, we don't see that in Alberta. as evidenced by our very low prevalence and the fact that everything suggests that this is a recent incursion of disease into Alberta. So while the work that Dr. Aiken is doing is elucidating one element, one aspect of potential chronic wasting disease transmission, the unanswered question is, but how much does this occur in the wild, and how much of the transmission in the wild is environmental-based as opposed to direct transmission from deer to deer, one infected individual passing on the prions to another infected or to another susceptible individual. And all of the data, certainly in the early stages as the disease is getting established in a population, it seems to indicate that deer-to-deer transmission is far more important, and that there may not be any role for environmental contamination until the prion has the opportunity to build up in the soil so that it can start to play a role in actual transmission in the wild.
From a government fish and wildlife point of view, what are the things that you have done over the years to contain this disease? Are you doing now what you used to do in the past?
Well, no, certainly programs evolve. They evolve as you learn more, and they evolve for a lot of different reasons. What have we done to contain the disease? It doesn't directly contain the disease, but I think the best thing that we have done over time is to simply provide information. Even before we detected CWD in the wild in Alberta, we were providing chronic wasting disease information to hunters, to landowners, to residents, to the general public, saying, hey, there's this disease. It seems to be a new disease in deer, and it has some serious negative potential to have negative effects on deer populations. And just to build a base of information so that if the disease or when the disease occurs here and there are things that need to be done, then you've got an educated population that you can work with and hopefully build support for the programs.
What about culling the deer?
The first time we used what could be considered a cull program, so a collection program where we have actively gone into the wild to collect deer for some component of our CWD program, actually started in 2001. And that followed the initial finding, the first ever finding of CWD in the wild anywhere in Canada, was a mule deer that was shot by a hunter in Saskatchewan in the fall of 2000. And when the results came out that that animal had tested positive for chronic wasting disease and that the animal occurred approximately 10 to 15 kilometers from the Alberta-Saskatchewan border, we'd had surveillance underway since 1998, but we needed a much more concerted sample, surveillance sample, in the area where the positive had been found on the Saskatchewan side. So that was the first time we used any kind of a collection program. It was an emergency program because literally we did not have enough information to be able to put this new finding that Saskatchewan was reported, to put it in perspective. So we needed to have more deer tested to know whether or not there was CWD. I mean, deer don't understand anything about a political border. It's a line on a map, means nothing to them. So we wanted to know, we wanted a better surveillance sample from the deer that were on the Alberta side of the line. And so that was our first use of a collection program to supplement a surveillance program. Now, we also, again, even though we had not yet detected CWD in Alberta, we were monitoring what was happening in other jurisdictions where chronic wasting disease was established. And now I'm talking Colorado and Wyoming, primarily in those days. And the research indications out of those areas that the disease was density dependent, so that if you have higher densities, higher concentrations of deer on the landscape, you were more likely to facilitate transmission. You would infect more individuals, and therefore the disease would become established that much more quickly or would spread more quickly. So with basic biological information like that in hand, we looked at our deer populations along the border where our chronic wasting disease risk is the greatest. We do believe that chronic wasting disease in Alberta is spilling over from Saskatchewan, from wild deer in Saskatchewan, transferring it to wild deer in Alberta. So looking at the risk factors for Alberta, we said we've got some fairly high deer densities in the immediate vicinity of where the disease has been identified in Saskatchewan. So if we were going to limit the spread of the disease and limit the extent of CWD in Alberta, we should start reducing the densities, therefore reduce the risk and try to limit any further spread of CWD. And we started that in 2005, and then we actually, that was in the winter, or the February of 2005, and then of course in September 2005, we have a case. And it wasn't where we had been looking. It wasn't in the north, in the Wainwright-Chauvin area. It was detected down on the South Saskatchewan, in the vicinity of the Red Deer River and the South Saskatchewan River. And again, we looked at deer numbers, deer densities, and following up on that initial collection program that we implemented immediately when we found our first case, then we said, okay, how can we try to limit chronic wasting disease? And the only tool that the CWD experts throughout Canada and the U.S., the only real management tool we have that's recommended for a wildlife agency is to reduce the transmission. The way to reduce the transmission is to reduce the density of deer in the vicinity where you found the case. So again, it wasn't just something that we cooked up here in Alberta. It was based on the best science of the day and the advice of the quote experts of the day, saying that given that our risk situation where we've been looking for it, we didn't find it, so if it's here, there's not very much of it. So it's like responding to a forest fire. If you were to respond to a spark before it gets established, you have a much better chance of preventing it expanding into a full-blown fire. And so it's that same basic approach that we applied along the border in our areas of greatest risk. And we worked in conjunction with the landowners, and it needs very, very much relies on landowner and resident support to let us go in and collect these deer. And certainly, it has proven to be our best tool for finding more cases. Of the 62 cases of chronic wasting disease that have been identified in wild deer in Alberta, I think it's 19 of them have been found through the hunter surveillance programs. And all of the rest of them have come from this targeted, focused response, putting our staff in the field, collecting deer, and in the area where they know that, where we know the disease exists, we find more diseased individuals, we find them in the early stages, and we get them off the landscape before they transmit to other deer. Now, your question was, are we still doing what we did in the past? And last year, in the winter of it's confusing because we call it the winter of 2009, but it's January, February 2009. Was the first year that we had new cases identified that we did not respond to, we did not put a control program in the field. And so the program was not, that element of the program was not delivered last year.
So I know when I was speaking with David Coltman, he said that he was using your cull program as a control for the research he was doing on the genetics side, but that was stopped kind of in the middle of his research. So perhaps you could explain that to me.
No, I don't think it would be the genetics.
Whatever
Merrill's program, in that indeed the Home Range and Deer Movement Study was set up in a block design, and some of the blocks were areas where we were applying control, and some of the blocks were areas where we were not applying control. And control is the term that I use in terms of where these are the winter programs where we go in and remove deer specifically to try to control the disease. So one of the things that we were looking at with that kind of design was, would the deer behavior change? Would their movement patterns change in an area where there was this winter removal program as opposed to an area that it wasn't? And I have no answer to that, in that, yes, that design did not was not, we couldn't apply it last year because we didn't come in with the, we didn't come in with the control program. Now, we do have the data from the situations where we do have before and after control, where they had collars on animals and we could see the movement patterns. And I think the data do indicate that, one, there wasn't a major response to the fact that we were in, that we were applying a collection program during the winter months. Because one of the things that we had been criticized for was that by the activity that we applied to the landscape in February and March was going to disperse the deer, so we were actually going to send infected deer running and dispersing the disease, which on a biological basis we never believed was going to be the case. And indeed, the data from the collared animals in the area where we were conducting the program, they did not move significantly away from their very narrow home range. So we did apply that long enough to learn some basic things from that.
From your perspective, what lies ahead in terms of where chronic wasting disease might go? Is it going to spread across the province? And what you feel needs to be done in order to control it?
In my opinion, there is no doubt that the handwriting is very clear, that this is a new invasive disease. There's no genetic barriers to further spread of the disease. We know that deer will interact, small populations, local populations interact. We know that deer use migration corridors, such as river valleys, as an example, as a movement corridor. There is no doubt in my mind that without some applied control, this disease will slowly, insidiously spread throughout deer populations and eventually potentially infect deer across the province. Certainly our high-risk zones at the moment would be anything on the North Saskatchewan, on the upstream on the North Saskatchewan River and upstream on the Red Deer River and the South Saskatchewan River. There are no known natural barriers to prevent this disease from just spreading. Similarly, in addition to the geographic spread, the data from other jurisdictions indicate that it will continue to increase within the local population, so that we will go from our current, some considerably less than 1% or 0.5% prevalence, that will build to 1% and 5%. And in Colorado, Wisconsin, Wyoming, we see CWD increasing up to 30 and 40% prevalence. And I think that is a significant concern for the hunting public. Now, we haven't talked about the potential human health risks associated with chronic wasting disease, and we leave that largely to public health officials. But all of the public health officials from the World Health Organization and the Centers for Disease Control and the local state and provincial health agencies have looked very, very aggressively for any evidence that chronic wasting disease has shown up as anything reflecting in human neurologic conditions, and they say there's no evidence of it whatsoever. And then there's a whole other line of research that involves genetically modified mice that you put human genes into these mice and then you try to infect them with chronic wasting disease, and you don't see any neurologic changes. But if you take those same mice with human genes and expose them to BSE, the mad cow prion disease, then indeed you do see neurologic changes. And that reflects what we've seen in the real world in Britain with the few cases of human Creutzfeldt-Jakob that appears to be related to having eaten BSE-infected cattle. But we don't see that when you put chronic wasting disease into those humanized mice. So that doesn't say that no human will ever get CWD, but it says that the risk of CWD as a human health concern is extremely low, if indeed there's any risk at all. And that's the wording from the World Health Organization. So that's the fact, but perception is often reality in particularly as it relates to diseases. And there is a perception among some of the hunting public and some of the general public that chronic wasting disease could potentially infect humans, so that they are concerned about the health of the animals that they harvest and then take home and feed to their families. And it's a perfectly legitimate concern. And so that even though it's not an acknowledged or an identified human health risk, if the disease continues to increase in prevalence, numbers of deer infected, then it's one more reason why hunters may choose not to go into the field. And for our deer management programs, we rely on hunters as a management tool to help limit populations and to harvest those animals that will either overpopulate if they're not harvested or that are going to die of winter kill. And then you've got the whole element of the recreational activity, the economic stimulus associated with big game hunting in the fall. If we've got fewer hunters in the field, we have the potential to affect the rural economy as relates to all of the expenditures around hunting. So there are multiple reasons, in my opinion, why simply watching the disease spread geographically and numerically is not wise stewardship of this very important natural resource.
You didn't go into the field this past winter. Was that a wise decision?
That is not a decision that is consistent with the science of what we know about this disease and the risk evaluation that applies specifically to CWD on the Alberta landscape.
What are other jurisdictions doing?
A really good question, and that's a question that we asked and was the driving force behind us hosting a CWD workshop last August, August of 2008, where we brought people together so that we could review wildlife agency responses to chronic wasting disease all across North America. And in case you want to look at, the report for that is up on our disease web pages. But what we saw was a broad spectrum of responses. Wyoming, as an example, basically has the disease, says it's there, and they're not doing anything about it, that it's bigger than what they can handle. And so they are choosing to be the control state, saying, we're going to document what happens if you don't try to control CWD. And so we'll learn about what the disease does in deer populations if it's uncontrolled. Wisconsin is a really interesting situation where they have been battling with chronic wasting disease since, I think, 2002. They found their first case. And they've done a lot of really good work. They've put a lot of good data on the table. And they have they're drafting a new 5-year plan for how to manage chronic wasting disease in Wisconsin. And I'm aware of this because I'm on a review panel that has just is providing input into whether their draft plan is likely to succeed or not. The two goals that they've identified are to limit the rate at which it spreads in the state and to limit the number of infected deer, so the rate at which the proportion of infected deer increases. So they're trying to limit geographic spread and the number of infected individuals. And they've been able to describe in the state two centers where the disease is well established, and they're going to work on the periphery, on the outside of those areas, where the disease would be spreading and where they would see the increase in the number. And they're going to use a combined program of hunter harvest for surveillance in the fall, so looking for the disease in the fall. And then in the winter, they use departmental sharpshooters to collect deer in the immediate vicinity in the 2 to 3 kilometer range and try to reduce the density in those areas and try to remove any other infected individuals that might have had contact with the infected deer that was removed. So that's an example of a jurisdiction that has CWD and has not given up on it and continues to try to wrestle as much control as they can with the current tools that we have. The other justification behind doing that is that eventually, and there are many aspects of research that might give us a better tool, so that if we get a better management tool, at least we have to apply it in a smaller geographic area rather than just letting the disease spread without any management of that spread. And then when we get a better tool, you've got to apply it over a much larger area. So that's another part of trying to limit, keep it kind of bottled up in a smaller area as possible. Then you have other jurisdictions like Maryland or Manitoba that have not yet detected chronic wasting disease in their wild animals, but they've looked at the factors of associated with CWD spread into new geographic areas, and so they've tightened their borders on imports. And they're establishing an education program with their hunters, and they're starting to do surveillance. And they are also monitoring what's going on in the other states and provinces that have CWD so that they can learn from our mistakes and also learn from our successes, that if or when CWD comes to Manitoba, they'll have a much better base to build their program founding on science and biological reality as much as they can.
Thank you very much, Margot.
You're welcome.